Accession number 28529, Wheel 6.
Wheel 6.
On the train going up through India, and you see, we were out there, you see, by that time we were Remi, and the Ordnance Corps were, the Ordnance Field Park were used to handle the stores. So we was with this load of Ordnance Field Park, and I don't know what it was about, something about, and they were funny lot of blokes, they were so amusing, they were real comical, some of them, and you should see the antics going on, trying to get the natives there to understand that they wanted some eggs. Stand up doing chicken noises and going like that until they finally understood what we wanted, and they'd done away, and well, we stayed waiting in the station and bring back these little weeny eggs, no bigger than pigeon eggs.
Bantam eggs?
I don't know what the chickens out there were so scrawny, I don't think they didn't get enough food allowed these. Why they wanted these eggs, I don't know, because they had no way of cooking them. Whether they used to eat them raw or not, I don't know, but I didn't know the offence. Oh, it's so funny. Anyway, went up through India, various places, I can't remember the names, and that's too went through them, and you'd stop for tiffin, and then you'd stop for dinner at night time, and then they'd shunt you into a siding, and sometimes they used to travel through the night. But we was in this long Indian passenger, the Indian, not the English ones, not the posh ones, the Indian carriages, which are knife-back seats in the front and seats all round the edge. But they're never packed as in. There was about, I suppose, 12, or perhaps around about a dozen of us, perhaps in one carriage. So you could, at night time, you could stretch out under seats and you all had a bed each. So you didn't have to sit up. You weren't all sat packed in like as they'd done. They used to get in, they used to cranky cramming in. They used to be on top of one another, something on top of the coaches hanging on the doors. Oh, the crash you used to be on these trains. How can they all get on now? Why did someone fall off? But we didn't. We just had about a dozen to a carriage. And they used to, when we stopped, they used to deliver us a block of ice. Because it was getting warm then, see? And they used to deliver a block of ice to put in our drinks. And we used to break them up. But the thing was, they used to drop this ice into the end of the carriage, was the toilet, which was all it was holding. It was just a little sort of ridge, and it's a slope down to a hole in the corner. And then that was your toilet. Yeah, well, the Indians, of course, us blokes squatting down there, we didn't find it at all comfortable, did we? But in the other corner, used to drop this block of ice in the bloody toilet, you know, because I didn't fancy it at times, but anything to cool your drink down, with that ice out there, we realised later it was lethal, wasn't it? Because they never sterilised the water. I don't know why. What gave them the idea that we should have ice, I don't know, but... But some of us got a bit of diarrhea, but I didn't. My guts were pretty tough, I think. I didn't suffer at all for anything like that. Only in Egypt, I've got a jippy tummy once, I was up in Tobruk. But anyway, up we went through all these towns, and fascinating now, just because the trains didn't travel very fast. So you could see what was happening around. Most of the country was dry and arid, and you go through some bits were a bit greener than others, but we never touched any big towns. But we finished up at a place called Ranchi. That's when my travel started. I'd been there very long, and the lorries had arrived, our kit was on it, and just before we left Ceylon, they brought in a new saddler's kit for me. Because he'd ordered this, I said I'd done saddler, because actually I showed him how I was good saddler, because I made him a Sam Brown. This cube, because then warrant officers were allowed to, suddenly they were allowed to wear a Sam Brown, which only his officers did before. And I've got some ox leather and other bits, and got the turners to make all the brass studs and that, and got the D's made in the various parts of the workshop. I made this lovely Sam Brown. We stitched it all up, you know, with two needles and a diamond awl and that. And he said, "Oh, yeah, good, you're that, aren't you, Doug?" He said, "Tell him how to do the leather stitching." I taught old Charlie, so Charlie had to, he got quite good at it, all right. And I made him this Sam Brown. He was so proud of his Sam Brown. He
shut it. What exactly is the Sam Brown?
Sam Brown is a belt that they hold there, and it's got a strap across the shoulder. See? And it's just, only officers used to wear them. But suddenly warrant officers were allowed to wear Sam Brown. And they used to hang their sword from them, or their holster or whatever. See? And it was just a bit of informal dress, I suppose, just a bit of dressage. But the batmen used to polish them up and that. And anyway, I made this Sam Brown, and had the buckle made in the workshops. All made in the workshops, all made out of local leather. The inside of the Sam Brown, to cover up all the brass studs and that, I had a jerkin, which is a leather jacket with no sleeves in. And, well, I picked it up in the desert somewhere, thought it would come in handy, and it did. I carried that around. I mean, I cut that up for various things. I made camera cases and things like that out of it, you know, this leather jerkin, because it was a bit dilapidated, but once you polished it up, it wasn't too bad. And I even lined the inside of it with part of this leather jerkin. Anyway, I had this saddler's kit. It was in a nice, like a little picnic basket, wicker basket, which I'd covered in canvas to keep it, because when I used to take it out in the jungle, I didn't want my tools to get wet. So I put waterproof canvas all over it. I've covered it all in canvas. There's this little handle, right? I need to put that in the back of the room, and I want my tools to undo the lock. And there's my saddler's tools, there's the needles, and I couldn't carry what they called the saddler's cramp. I couldn't carry that around because it was too big. It was still about 3 foot high. See? So what I did, I found an old deck chair. At the wood, the beach of this deck chair, I made a sort of a improvised clamp to hold the leather. What you still use, what you do, you have the clamp and you clamp it between your legs, like that, and it's there, and you stitch it on, you see, with two needles. Put your all through, needle, like that. Yeah. And doing the fracturing and putting the needles on the end of the thread, that's all an art too, see? So you don't know, because you can't knot it, see? You have to put it through and weave it round. So that's a saddler's trick, and you wax it, and I had a lovely great lump of wax, and I brought it home with me, and I've still got a little bit left like that in this room here that I still use for waxing my thread when I'm sewing a button on. How about that? Yeah,
waxing thread, I've learned something.
Wax it, wax the thread, yeah. Yeah, make sure you, especially if you're sewing buttons on, you can do, instead of doing just two strands, do three or four strands and wax it so it's all in one. And all you want is two or three turns around, you've got your buttons on. That was a quick, yeah, oh, that's a good tip there, anyway. So, up at Rantry, and I had this new saddler's basket. They said, right, get your small kit together, because that means you do leave your kit bag, and that you just take your necessaries, your shaving kit, your washing kit, your socks and change your shirt and things like that. And, right, get your small kit together and take your big pack and small pack, and when did I do that? Oh, when we was in Ceylon, we found a small pack on the back, on the side, was a nuisance. So we take the small pack and put it on the front of the big pack. So you had your big pack on your back, which is a square pack like that. And then you put the small pack on the back. And
how
you didn't
attach it?
Oh, you sew it on the machine. Yeah. So put the big pack out flat, sew your small pack on the back like that, eh? And then fold it back up again.
Practical.
So up again, and you've got your small pack. So that was handy. That was better than, because we didn't have rucksacks, see? Which would come in handy later. And my idea like that was copied right the way through the brigade. Yeah. Oh, well. It's all that improvising. It's a trick to get up to. Anyway, they said to me, you're going on detachment, a light A detachment, to the, I think it was the Second Queen's. I'm sure it was, because I was with the King's Unless and the, I was, by that time, we were no longer the 16th Brigade, we suddenly became the 14th Brigade. Whether they transferred us over to that brigade, because I was in Ceylon, it was the 16th British Infantry Brigade. that suddenly we became the 14th Brigade. Later on, when I come back, I was with the 23rd Brigade, so, but also not a blokes. Don't ask me, sometimes we amalgamate, sometimes we all split up, it depends on what we do. Anyway, right, you're going on the aid detachment, so there was myself, there was a mechanic, I think it was an armour or something, there was several trades anyway, it was about eight of us, I think. In a way, on a light aid detachment. Right, you've got to go to the Queen's because they're preparing to go into Burma. And they were the Chindits then. They had become the Chindits and the war winds. They went on various. They'd been up in India before us and they'd been on various schemes, but we followed them up, caught them up. And so they went to a place called Ranchi. I'd been there about there for 2 or 3 weeks. And that was in the end of January, February, something like that. Beginning of the year, I remember I was in 43 at the start, and I had to go there and I had to go and look after the mule harness and the things, the straps and that they put the kit on the back of these side saddles on these mules, and they were getting broken that they didn't have it, they couldn't try to go and do repairs for them. So anyway, I was there about. Within about 3 weeks, a month, and suddenly they, oh, we're moving. I get your kit all ready tomorrow, we're moving. So I didn't know where they're moving to. Whether they should have taken us or not, I don't know. I never found out that. But somebody must have known we were going with them, see? But suddenly, we've got on a train, I can't remember the exact journey. How did we. Must have been a bridge across the Chinwin, because. Somebody said, oh, we've crossed the Chinwin. After several, we went on this little train up somewhere in northern, up in Assam somewhere it was. I'm sure it must have been that way. Looking at the map later, it must have been the way we went. Because don't ask me where we were, because I just followed it. To pack your kit up, I was with some signals chap. They said, oh, you hang on these, and the mechanic was with me because he looked after the little generators that charged their batteries up with the signals. Anyway, we travelled for a little while, I can't think, several days, a week, what, I don't know. And then somebody says, they said, well, don't you know where you are now? Where are we? You're in bloody Burma, aren't you? Hey, what are we doing down here? Are you, you're down here with us? It's all been these Chinwins. I was nothing about it, you know. Whether I was supposed to be with them, I should have gone back to uni, I don't know. But anyway, I was stuck.
Had you heard of the Chinwins before then?
Well, we'd heard rumours about them, but everything was hush hush. Nobody tell anybody about anything, you see. And me, I didn't care. All I wanted to do was get on with little jobs in the workshop. I didn't care. I wasn't an infantryman or a soldier or anything like that. I was at work when I was a craftsman doing jobs in the workshop. That was my interest. And they said, go here, go there. I went there and went there. You know? I just done what I was told. I never did ask any questions. What am I doing this for? Why would we do that for another bit, you know?
Whatever you were doing, you were helping the war.
Every job I did, but even later on when we prepared for the second lot going in, I didn't go in with those, but we'd done a lot of work for them in different ways. I'll come to that later. Anyway, suddenly, we're off. All these living mules, I remember these mules, and we're walking. And that's all I remember doing, walking.
Each mule had a muleteer.
Yeah, they're Indian muleteers. See? I remember some Gurkhas with us, and some Sikhs. I remember the turbans. And there was quite a lot of Indian troops. Later on, I've read something about there was about 3,000, wasn't there, went down the first lot. But I was with the 16th, or the old 16th Brigade. Which was the brigade that Wingate had had in Ceylon, same lot of folks. And I was with these signals blokes, and I didn't have any work to do, and he could have me little my little basket used to go on the back of a mule. And we didn't have like all this umping heavy trucks. There's a load of rubbish we all had. And a lot of them done what I'd done, put their small packs on the back of their big packs. And we had Bren pouches, originally made to put Bren magazines in, but we had them loaded up with ammunition. But they were a weight, these big boxes on each side. And when you picked your cow, somebody else picked your cow up for you, put it on your back. You couldn't have done it yourself because you couldn't have put your arm up. And you used to load each other up, see? When they say, right, now pack's on, and you was on the move again, see? And I was with the signal blokes. So the infantry, they were up the front, and when you think these columns over, they start going, imagine strapped for about a mile or more, you know? And, so, of course, the signals blokes had their radio kit, and one lot we caught up with all the time after they had these 3-inch mortars on the backs of these mules. So whether they used them or not, I don't know, because all I remember is going from one place to the other, resting a few days, and these flaming K-rations.
Oh. This is Wingate's rations.
Wingate, yeah. This was the thing, yeah, and we were the first lot. We walked in. We say we walked in. The other lot had flown in, wasn't it? The second lot, they went in on the gliders and that. And the Dakotas took them in, didn't they? And they formed up these big areas of, they had thousands of troops in, didn't they? Not twice as many. Another lot were down in what they called the box. When the Japs tried to come up the coast, there was another lot of troops there, weren't they? And the heavy fighting there. I heard all about it later on. And a lot of casualties there. And then there was Imphal and Kohima. And we were down in the jungle on their lines of communication. I remember once I watched them, and they blew up this railway line. Another time I had to take part in this ambush along this road, ambushes these wackly lorries, Japanese lorries, and they demolished the tank. They had one tank, but they demolished the tank, stopped the convoy, and then they slaughtered the rest of the lot. And I was right up on the top of the hill watching it all. Yeah, didn't take any prisoners. What were they doing? We said the jungle, and they couldn't take any prisoners. We had to keep them. They shot the lot, didn't they? Yeah, no. Well, it was the same. Japs are the same. We were told when they took prisoners, the Japs used to shoot our boys. So whether we started it or not, I don't know. But anyway, they shot. They didn't sort of burnt all these lorries. Remember these lorries going up in flames, and the ammunition going off. And, God, what a sight.
Were you affected by this at the time? Were you affected by the scenes that you saw?
Don't think so. To me, looking back, to me it was a great adventure. I was a great boy for the boys' adventure books, you know. You remember when we were kids, the adventure, the Hotspur and the Magnet, and not so much the Magnet of the school, but these Morgan the Mighty and these famous blokes who did daring deeds and that, you know, and the Tuckney Bloods boys' magazines. To me, that's what it was all about, you know. It was an adventure. The only thing that irked me so much was all that walking. You walk everywhere, no transport. You walk one place, you know, you shake pony.
What would you say the weight on your that you carried?
Not on the back, because you had just your kit, your own kit. You used to carry your little bits and pieces you wanted. I had my bit of Billy, took that with me, and I took, because my feet sweat so terribly, I used to take plenty of socks. And every chance I got, I used to wash them into my socks. So, because it's full of more wet socks in my pack than the other. Wrapped with a bit of old brown sheets and all that. And when we crossed the rivers, we had to float our stuff across. So, our ground sheets, we used to do them up in a parcel. And you go across with your rifle like that, and pushing you tie it on the back, or get it across somewhere, you float your goods across your pack and that, and things that you, my famous basket.
I was going to say, was that your idea?
Or what?
To float them.
Oh no, 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 no! The infantry found that out when I was in Ceylon. I think so. It was an old trip. And we used to go across his, what they called his chongs. See, it wasn't too wet out there because we went out in the dry. I think the monsoons had finished. I think. Because it's February, wasn't it? Only 43, I think, where we were in. Only a couple of months. By God, we did travel due to whether it was because we didn't travel very fast, but I was walking today, you know, from dawn to dusk, and we used to stop before it got too dark, so we'd set up our camps.
Did the Gurkhas, did they speak English?
Not very well, no. No, in fact, most of the officers don't Gurkha. The gangs don't expect them to know English. No, we used to call them Johnny, and they a little bit of English. They used to know hello and how are you and that sort of thing, but that's as much as they get. And we used to say, okay, tickety boo, tick eye, you know, bada salam. And various bits of Urdu and they used to learn and that. But no, we weren't with them much, are we? Because I was with the signals mostly. I was attached to them. I was told to hang on to the signal boats. We were them, stay with them. And when I went to them, I used to run errands for them and take messages. They'd come on the radio and say, I'll take it. And I used to run across the HQ place where the officers gathered and give the message to Captain this, Captain that. And I used to help with their generators too, set their generators up, because they used to have a long rubber pipe that used to attach to the generator, and they used to run that out several yards so that the exhaust was very muffled. The time it came out, the generator wasn't, you couldn't hear it much at all. If you took the rubber fire, you could hear it but on this bit along the rubber tube they had, or rubber and metal it was, and that sort of stopped the sound of the generators, because you had to be fairly quiet, because you never knew how far you were from the Japs, you see. It was get in, hit them and run, see? And we used to do more running away from them. When they did bump against the Japs any time, there was some pretty hefty battles, but of course we were more in the rear and we weren't at the sharp end at all. Because the signals were that way, they'd be more important in the rear and the back. And of course when they used to, these Indian muleteers used to bring their straps up for me, I used to have my little makeshift cramp, and I used to sit there in the evening, and with a couple of days in the camp, and I'd be sitting a stone all day long and keep myself busy. And some of the chickens come with their boots, soles would come off, and I'd sew the soles on their boots and things like that. I used to do that, every of my hands, eh? But I used to sit there amazing. Now I used to repair these straps and. Some of them who died, I say, don't keep the tack. I said, don't throw the tack away. And they used to have I don't know where they used to keep it, but they say, have you got a bit going here? Yes, sir. And he's going to come back with another bit of strap, right, and I can join it on. And the webbing, the fellas' webbings, when they used to break, most of the webbing had a brass tag on the end to stop it from fraying. But when they used to leave the tag on the end, the webbing used to start fraying, so they'd say, can you do any of this? They said, yeah, okay, and I used to turn it over and put a few stitches in it. They used to bind it up for me. And splicing as well, ropes. Now, when I was at Bundingford, this sergeant we had there, he taught me splicing. How to splice a rope. He was red hot. He used to make a Turk's head, what they call a Turk's head. I used to do that. You know, I could never fathom how he did it. He used to do it so quick. But anyway, splicing is quite an art in splicing, and these company ropes have broken something on their leads or something like that, and I used to splice a little bit on and splice a loop into it. So
how wide were the ropes then?
Oh, only just little ropes. Didn't have any big heavy stuff, just a lead.
You must have had good equipment to do that.
What?
To splice?
No, you do it by hand, and a fit. I had a little fit, and then you do it by hand. Oh, yeah, it's just a case of opening the strands and bringing the other strands around and lacing them in between the... And you weave them round with the pattern of the rope, the twist of the rope, and then you all the little bits you cut off, and you've got a rope that goes round, and it's woven into the other bit of rope. It's very, very strong. It was a bunny when he decided, and he said, they want something to do that. I was fairly good at it, you know, and he said, they got some splicing to do over at such and such a place. I went out there, and it's with a wire hawser. Like that it was, a tow rope. They wanted me to splice an eyelet at the end of it. Oh, I could do that. I tried, and no. He goes, all right, muck up it. There's about 24 strands down here now. I lost myself after that. So when it finished, I took it over the world and said, yeah, weld this up, and he welded it. But that's a nice, they're splicing for them. Well, I made myself useful, you know. I didn't go there. But whether I was supposed to be there, I never found out. I suppose they must have known I was there because I've got the medal. See? I've got the Burma Star medal, see? And you got that down at the Burma, didn't you?
Maybe you were just simply the chosen one.
Well, I must have reminded me. The other fellas are there, the armour chap. I understand him because he used to help repair their weapons, and the mechanic, he used to look after the generators. And who's the other? There's another couple of three blokes, I can't remember what they were doing now, sure. Can't remember what their trades were. But you never saw much of those. I saw the mechanic because he used to come and do the generators. The armourer, I never saw him, I don't know where he was. And I was with this little signals group. And they used to set up their little radios and chin up the tree and put their areas up. And it used to fascinate me. And they say, keep your eye on that generator, Dave. I'd top up petrol and things like that. Like
and that was helpful. Yeah,
I made myself useful, you know. But I didn't do any. The same as I said, didn't fire the gun in anger. I didn't really, did I? See? But,
the muleteers, did they become very fond of their mules?
I think so. Those mules, from what I could see of them, some of them were better than others. Some were docile, others were real blighters, you know. And as I say, I remember a couple of times they liked these railway lines, and other times it was our ambush, but other times I never saw much of what they did up the front because they were. The sharp end, as we called it, the infantry were up there. And we were sort of reiterated more like with the headquarters, you know. The big officers, the brigadier was up there with us and various other high-flying officers. But after a while, it got too hot. The Japs used to come over looking for us in their Zeros. Their planes, anyway. Our Jap plane was a Zero. And we finally had to disperse and make our way back. And I thought, oh, hang on, these signal blokes, they seem to know what they're doing. And we got back, and it took us on this little railway. How the hell did I get back there? A little narrow gauge railway we got on, and it was rocking away there. I hung on to my little basket, that's the only thing I brought back out with me. I still had my rifle. I lost my stuff in it. I don't think I lost my gold. I was hanging on to my stuff. And we got out best we can. And they went out, and some of them, I understand some of them went out into China. And we just had to sort of retreat and get back as quick as we could because the Japs were onto us. So after we'd blown up a few of their railway lines. And
you took part in that, did you, blowing up the railway
lines? No, we watched them. I watched them move to the back. And they didn't. They must have heard it, you know. So whether they soon, I suppose they soon repaired them. I don't think they did much at first, like Chindis. They just like a little bee sting. They just annoyed the Japs. I think to make them realise the British troops could get back in there, I suppose. I don't know. I never analyse. You didn't in those days. You didn't analyse what you were doing. You just done what you were told and got on with the job. And I come back to... didn't get back to Ranchi. How did I finish back in Bangalore? Oh, it's all a bit vague, that, because I was not traumatised, but I was in a state of bad constipation. Oh, God. Those bloody K-Russians. He's covered all the words. He's got raisins, a bit of chocolate, a sachet of coffee, little sachet of orange juice, and various bits like that, some biscuits.
Not a proper balance.
No, because you just ate it because you were just to fill yourself up. And you never got a proper meal or anything like that. And I remember when we got back to, something like that. And we went to our first meal. I was violently sick afterwards. But I went out some proper ladder. This time I wouldn't take it. It was all in a terrible state, you know, ragged. I lost one of my shirts. It was all the sleeves, half the sleeve was off.